This is the voice of the Trumpet Magazine. News, economy, politics, trends, discovery, health, family, the Bible, the future. This is Trumpet Hour.
Hello, this is Jeremiah Jacques, contributing editor of the Philadelphia Trumpet News Magazine. I'm filling in today for your regular host, Mr. Joel Hilliker. Thank you for tuning in to KPCG-FM for our first Trumpet Hour episode of the new year, on the Gregorian calendar anyway. We're just 2 days into 2019 now, and I'd like to talk to you today about a subject that will be becoming even more relevant and even more dramatic this year than it has over the last few years. And to launch into this, we'll first just list a few of the major infrastructure projects that are underway right now around the world. In Pakistan, there's a new deepwater port that's being linked to a vast new network of road and rail across the country. In Montenegro, the country's very first border-to-border motorway is being laid. In Kazakhstan, in a, well, it's just a remarkably remote part of the country, there's a bustling town that's suddenly just springing up from scratch around a massive new rail terminal. In Laos, there in Southeast Asia, there's a stunning new bridge being built that's broken the world record for the longest span between two piers. And in Rwanda, a brand new railway is being built that connects the landlocked country to Tanzania's port of Dar es Salaam. These are major projects, huge initiatives, and the common factor in all of them is that they are parts of an initiative by one nation, China. Back in 2013, Chinese President Xi Jinping was delivering a speech in Kazakhstan, and he mentioned the ancient Silk Road. That was the network of trade routes, some of which were established as early as 200 BC. And the Silk Road facilitated the movement and flow of, you know, goods and ideas and culture of all kinds across Asia, the Middle East, Africa, and Europe. So Xi Jinping mentioned the ancient Silk Road, and then he announced something momentous. He said China would be rebuilding that ancient network. He said, quote, "This will be a great undertaking. To turn this into a reality, we may start with work in individual areas and link them up over time to cover the whole region." End quote. Well, the Chinese promptly put the plan into action, which is what those projects in, you know, Pakistan, Montenegro, Kazakhstan, Laos, Rwanda, and more than 60 other nations are all about. Beijing is sparing no expense to better connect the world to China. Many are calling this the project of the century, but China calls it the Belt and Road Initiative, or the BRI. You can really break the Belt and Road Initiative down to two components, and they're both in the name. The belt is on land. It's a land-based economic belt that consists of six corridors linking east to west. And then the road is a maritime road. This is basically a series of ports that stretch from the South China Sea to Africa's east coast, and also up through the Middle East to the Mediterranean and Europe. China's Belt and Road Initiative also incorporates industrial parks, pipelines, oil refineries. There's also a new cargo flight, actually a whole system of cargo flights that are called the Silk Road in the Air. The BRI includes a new satellite navigation service. It also includes power generation facilities, fiber optic grids, mines, and much, much more. Altogether, the Belt and Road Initiative will link 60% of the global population, and it'll span three continents with its extensions reaching into the other four. At an estimated cost of $5 trillion, it is the most ambitious infrastructure venture in all of mankind's history. William F. Lawrence is a research professor at James Cook University in Australia. He was recently interviewed about this Chinese venture by Nexus Media, and he said, quote, "The Belt and Road Initiative simply blows out of the water anything else that's been attempted in human history. It'll affect every facet of human endeavor in one way or another." End quote. Every facet of human endeavor will be affected, he says. That's a, you know, it's a striking statement. And what's also striking and sobering is that the Belt and Road Initiative has one purpose. It has one overarching and underpinning purpose: to give China dominance over world trade. The journalist Sam Ellis wrote about this in April of last year, April of 2018. He said, "The Belt and Road Initiative is designed to reroute global trade, and it is how China plans to become the world's next superpower." End quote. More and more analysts, like William Lawrence, who we just quoted there, and Sam Ellis, they're coming to see the history-altering implications of China's Belt and Road Initiative. But there is something far more momentous about China's moves toward dominating global trade that very few experts recognize. And that is that what we're seeing today, these moves toward Chinese dominance of global trade, were prophesied in Bible scriptures written thousands of years ago. And now, with the Belt and Road Initiative and other related initiatives underway, these prophecies are being fulfilled. So we'll dig into some of those specific and very eye-opening scriptures in the second half. But first, it's important to understand just the sheer scope of the Belt and Road Initiative and to see just how game-changing it is, and to look at why Beijing is having so much success in convincing nations to work with China on this project. For nations with governments that are less democratic and more authoritarian and autocratic, the allure of China's loans is particularly enticing. And that's because, unlike the United States and unlike many European nations, China doesn't make its loans and its infrastructure investments conditional on good governance. You know, China itself is a horrible abuser of the human rights of its people. And so the Chinese leadership have no concerns at all about autocrats in other nations tyrannizing their people. So Western powers, especially the U.S., often sermonize to these authoritarian governments. They sometimes punish them, and they withhold aid. Sometimes they may even work to try to remove authoritarians and dictators from power. But China is different. China has no compunctions about building airports for autocrats, building dams for dictators, and constructing terminals for tyrants. The Brookings Institute wrote about this in 2017 and said, quote, "China is seen as more flexible and less bureaucratic. Given this situation, the emergence of China as a major funder of infrastructure projects has been welcomed by most developing countries." End quote. So these less developed and often less democratic countries welcome China's easy money, and China's eager to give it to them, or actually loan it to them, is more accurate. Nothing is free here. But the Chinese have signed Belt and Road contracts with numerous authoritarian governments, including those in Azerbaijan, Belarus, and Saudi Arabia. China's also working with military regimes in nations like Egypt and Thailand. The Chinese are also pulling in several of the world's most corrupt nations, including Uzbekistan and Turkmenistan. And finally, China is incorporating several nations into the BRI that are deeply mired in conflict, countries like Yemen, Afghanistan, and Iraq. So on the surface, from China's perspective, some of the investment into these nations doesn't really seem to make much sense. You know, all of the corruption and conflict and these other complicating factors make it unlikely that many of these countries would be able to repay China for those loans. In early 2018, the Center for Global Development published an analysis of debts owed to China by countries taking part in the BRI, and they found that 8 nations, Djibouti, Kyrgyzstan, Laos, the Maldives, Mongolia, Montenegro, Pakistan, and Tajikistan, are all at high risk of being unable to repay the loans. And several other countries could soon be added to that list. So why then? Why does China keep on handing out massive loans to these kinds of nations? Well, the answer is because the Belt and Road Initiative and much of China's related policy is about more than just economics. To dig a little deeper into what that means, let's take a look at Sri Lanka. When China first started offering money for Belt and Road Initiative projects, Sri Lanka was among the most enthusiastic countries to welcome China's quick cash. The Sri Lankans accepted billions of dollars worth of loans to build projects like the Magampura Mahinda Rajapaksa port, which is there in Hambantota, Sri Lanka. This port is at a key location for China's maritime road, you know, the series of ports we mentioned there that stretch from China's east coast to Africa's east coast. So it's at a prime location for that, and its construction really was a victory for China. But for the Sri Lankan economy, the project was a bust. Instead of fueling growth, this port and a few other Chinese-funded infrastructure projects, they plunged Sri Lanka into unsustainable debt. Back in 2010, Sri Lanka was in pretty good shape economically. Its foreign debt stood at only 36% of gross domestic product, or GDP. But after several years of deals with China, like the one to build that Rajapaksa port, the number had soared to 94%. By 2016, one-third of Sri Lanka's total government revenue had to go toward servicing Chinese loans. And Sri Lanka was forced to apply for debt relief with the International Monetary Fund, the IMF. But the IMF relief was not enough. You know, it was just a Band-Aid on a bullet wound. And from there, the situation for Sri Lanka only got worse. By late 2017, the Sri Lankans owed China billions, with interest rates on some of the loans as high as 7%. As the pressure intensified and the options narrowed, Sri Lanka's government determined that the only course of action for them was to hand China a controlling stake in the Rajapaksa port for 99 years. This transfer was huge news. It set off alarms in Sri Lanka and beyond because it really represented a huge Chinese victory, even with potential military applications. Foreign Policy wrote about this on October 29th of last year, saying, quote, "The acquisition provided Beijing with a deep water port in the region in which it can dock its navy off the coast of its key regional competitor, India." End quote. So that was a major conquest for China. And Sri Lanka is often cited as the textbook example of what is often called China's debt trap diplomacy. But Sri Lanka is far from the only place where Chinese investment is going pear-shaped for the borrowing nation, and in turn creating conditions for Chinese conquest. Liu Xinkun is a senior research fellow at the Shanghai Center for Global Trade and Economic Governance, and during an IMD discovery event a few months back, he said, quote, "China wants to avoid the impression that it is sinking its dragon claws into other countries." End quote. So China doesn't want the world to see the BRI that way. But as BRI progress continues, it is becoming clearer that for many of the nations that signed up, that's just what's happening. Consider Djibouti, the tiny nation in East Africa. Thanks to Chinese cash, Djibouti is already home to China's first overseas military base. But Djibouti has now borrowed more money from China than it can pay back. And it's now headed toward a debt-to-GDP ratio of 88%. That's a stunning figure, not too far behind the one that plunged Sri Lanka into so much trouble. And this is really giving China more and more leverage over Djibouti. Analysts are beginning to worry that China could soon use this growing leverage to convince Djibouti to kick the United States military out of Camp Limonier. That's America's only permanent military base in Africa right now, and China's in a position, possibly, to get the doors on that U.S. base closed. Foreign Policy wrote about this in July, saying, quote, "One concern is that the Djibouti government, facing mounting debt and increasing dependence on extracting rents, would be pressured to hand over control of Camp Limonier to China." End quote. So it's really not hard to see how such a move would represent a huge loss for the United States and a major victory for China. And then to go south a little bit to Zambia. For similar reasons, the Zambian government is also now deeply indebted to China. And reports have begun to surface saying that the Chinese are working to settle the score by possibly turning control of Zambia's state-owned electrical company and Zambia's main international airport, turning control of those over to China. In Kenya, the situation is also similar. Just last week, a very sobering report was published by a local publication there called Africa Stand. And it said the Kenyan government is, quote, "at risk of losing the lucrative Mombasa port to China should the country fail to repay huge loans advanced by Chinese lenders," end quote. And those loans were given to Kenya by China, largely to build the Stand Gauge Railway, which connects Port Mombasa, which is the largest port in East Africa, to Kenya's capital, Nairobi. So this is clearly a component of the Belt, you know, the Belt part of the Belt and Road Initiative. The Stand Gauge Railway is about allowing China to tap into Africa's resources and then quickly ship them to China. And now China has Kenya in serious trouble, and in a situation where the Kenyans may even need to hand control of that port, the largest port in all of East Africa, to China. And then there's Pakistan. At the beginning of the episode, we briefly mentioned the new Chinese-built infrastructure there that stretches all the way from Gwadar Port on Pakistan's Arabian Sea coast, all the way up to the China-Pakistan border. So for China, this is not just a really valuable crossroads where the belt meets the road, but it's also a safeguard against one of China's greatest fears, and that is a potential U.S. naval blockade in the South China Sea. So before the development of the port and road and rail networks there through Pakistan, the idea of a U.S. naval blockade in the South China Sea was terrifying to the Chinese, because that would have posed a serious threat to China, possibly even an existential threat. But now, China has an alternative route established for bringing goods into China, particularly the Middle Eastern oil and gas that China heavily depends on. So the value of all this, this Pakistani infrastructure to China, is immense. It's hard to even quantify it. But for Pakistan, it hasn't gone so well. Pakistan now owes China more than $6 billion for these projects, and the Pakistani government is paying exorbitant interest rates on some of the loans. Chris Chappell of China Uncensored spoke about this on August 1st of 2018, and he said, quote, "That kind of debt gives China some leverage. And thanks largely to that leverage, China's already taken control of Gwadar Port with a 40-year lease, and now the Chinese are constructing a naval and air force base nearby." And then there's also the Maldives. Like Sri Lanka, the Maldives are located right along the, what some call the String of Pearls route. And this nation is also now heavily indebted to China, thanks mostly to a multi-million dollar bridge that the Chinese built there. This bridge is called the China-Maldives Friendship Bridge, but that name is utterly misleading. This bridge isn't about China having some deep affinity or friendship for the people of the Maldives. It's really about China getting more control and more power. And the Maldives is in trouble now. Last year, their debt-to-GDP ratio soared to nearly 100%. And as the economic troubles intensify, many fear that the Maldives will soon have no choice but to hand some assets over to China, just like Sri Lanka has done. And then one last country I'll mention here is Montenegro. Montenegro is there in Europe, just across from Italy, on the Adriatic Sea there. And a few years ago, the Montenegrins thought they would build a highway from the port of Bar, there on the Adriatic, all the way across Montenegro's rough terrain to Serbia on the other side. So that was the goal. But they conducted some feasibility studies, and the studies found that the highway was not economically viable. The studies showed that it was too expensive, and the motorway wouldn't be used by enough people to pay for the expense. So that might have been the end of it. But in 2014, China dismissed all of those studies, or ignored them. And it stepped in and gave Montenegro a loan to build a large stretch of that highway. Well, today the highway is unfinished, and Montenegro is in serious financial trouble. An EU official spoke to Reuters about this last year on the condition of anonymity, and he said, quote, "Montenegro's fiscal space has shrunk enormously. They have strangled themselves, and the debt that Montenegro incurred has only bought it a highway to nowhere." End quote. And then Reuters said that if the situation there in Montenegro plays out as with the case in Sri Lanka, then Beijing could have a port of entry into Europe from the Adriatic. And the list of nations where China's control is growing goes on and on. It's also important to know about the role that Latin America is playing in the Belt and Road Initiative. In some ways, this is a fairly new development because the BRI originally focused on Asia, the Middle East, Africa, and Europe. You know, those were the regions connected by the ancient Silk Road, so that's what China wanted to reconnect. But in 2017, Xi Jinping said China sees Latin America as, quote, "a natural extension of the maritime Silk Road," end quote. 6 months after that, China formally invited Latin American and Caribbean nations to join the initiative. And many of them were really quick to jump on board. Panama, Antigua and Barbuda, Trinidad and Tobago, and Bolivia have all signed on already. And more countries are poised to follow suit. And even before unveiling the Belt and Road Initiative, the main thrust of China's approach to Latin America had long been in the same basic vein as the BRI. You know, China focused on infrastructure financing and development of various infrastructure projects. We can go all the way back to the year 2005, long before the Belt and Road Initiative was a stated goal for China. And at that time, the Chinese started to extend tens of billions of dollars worth of financing to build ports, roads, and railways in Latin America and the Caribbean. These funds built a port in Trinidad and Tobago. They also built a railway network in Argentina. And they built a vast network of roads in both Costa Rica and Jamaica. China's now retroactively rebranding many of these kinds of projects as BRI successes. So even though they were started and in some cases completed before Xi Jinping's big speech about resurrecting the Silk Road back in 2013, you know, even though they were started and completed before that, China's sort of retroactively calling these BRI successes. So this has prompted some criticism that China's Belt and Road Initiative, especially in Latin America, is just sort of pouring old wine into new bottles. And it's just kind of, you know, relabeling something that was already happening anyway. But really, the branding of the projects matters far less than China's overall increasing determination to integrate Latin America into China's globe-girdling enterprise. China really is turning Latin America into a natural extension of the Belt and Road Initiative. So it's clear that China is rebalancing the world economy. It's a massive shift. With the Belt and Road Initiative and with related initiatives, China is accomplishing something momentous. You're listening to Trumpet Hour here on KPCG FM. When we come back, we'll talk about the extraordinary significance that China's Belt and Road Initiative takes on when it's viewed through the lens of Bible prophecy.
This is the voice of the Trumpet News Magazine. You're listening to Trumpet Hour.
Hello, this is Jeremiah Jacques. You're listening to Trumpet Hour here on KPCG FM. I'm filling in today for your usual host, Mr. Joel Hilliker. And on the show today, we're talking about China's Belt and Road Initiative and the success that Beijing is having in rebalancing the world economy in China's favor. In the first half, we discussed the sheer scope of this project of the century and the staggering size and the reach of the initiative and the danger that it poses to many nations. And that's all very significant economically and geopolitically. But the most significant aspect of China's moves toward dominating global trade is that it was prophesied in Bible scriptures written thousands of years ago. Bible prophecy says that in the end time, shortly before worldwide war breaks out and before Jesus Christ returns, there will be a global era that begins called the times of the Gentiles. Jesus Christ himself used this phrase in Luke 21, verse 24. He said, quote, "Jerusalem shall be trodden down of the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled." End quote. Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Fleury wrote about this quickly approaching era in our July 2014 issue of the Philadelphia Trumpet. And he wrote, quote, "These times of the Gentiles are yet to be fully realized, but we are in the outer edges of this catastrophic storm." End quote. And then Mr. Fleury explained what exactly the term Gentile means, saying that they are non-Israelite peoples. And then he wrote, quote, "Israel is a lot more than the little nation in the Middle East. There are 12 nations of Israel on earth." End quote. And then he explains that in end time prophecy, Israel refers mainly to modern day America and Britain, which are among those 12 nations. And if you'd like a thorough explanation of that, please go to thetrumpet.com and click on the literature tab and order a copy of our free book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy, by Mr. Herbert W. Armstrong. But from there, Mr. Fleury writes, quote, "Once you understand who Israel is, then you can understand how the Gentiles, the non-Israelite peoples, have started to take charge of the world right now." End quote. So this new era that we're entering into is a major shift. You know, for several decades, the United States and the United Kingdom have brought much stability to the world. But in the times of the Gentiles, the US and the UK will lose global power to two major blocks of non-Israelite or Gentile nations. And Mr. Fleury explains in his article that one of these blocks will revolve around Germany, and the other will revolve around China and Russia. So China's increasing power and it's increasing connectivity with the Belt and Road and with related initiatives, is really shifting global power away from the U.S. and the U.K., those Israelite nations, and toward these other nations. And there are prophecies showing that as this shift continues, China will briefly cooperate in a history-altering way with the German-led Gentile power. Some 2,700 years ago, God inspired the prophet Isaiah to write about a vast trade bloc that would be formed in our lifetimes. In Isaiah 23, verse 3, he wrote, quote, "She is a mart of nations." And verse 1 of the chapter there describes a leading nation in this trade bloc called Chittim. Chittim is an ancient name that is often used for China. And Mr. Fleury has explained this in his booklet, Isaiah's End Time Vision. One part of that booklet says, quote, "Genesis 10:4 lists the sons of Japheth's fourthborn son. The sons of Javan were Elisha, Tarshish, Kittim, and Dodanim." And then Mr. Fleury says, quote, "Kittim is synonymous with the Chittim of Isaiah's prophecy. After their migration through Central Asia, the Kittim made their appearance in modern-day northeastern China and Mongolia under the name of Khitan in the 4th century AD. And then Isaiah 23 also names Tyre as the other main power in this mart of nations. And Mr. Fleury explains that this city represents the commercial center of modern Europe. He writes, quote, "The spiritual center of the modern European Holy Roman Empire is called Babylon in your Bible, which you can see in Revelation 17:5 and Revelation 18, verses 1 through 3. But here in Isaiah, the Bible refers to Tyre and its allies as the commercial center of this European power. By understanding the spiritual and the commercial powers, you can understand what a colossus is rising in Europe." End quote. The prophecies also mention ancient names for modern Japan, Russia, and some other nations. So this shows that they too will be a part of this enormous trade bloc. They'll be incorporated into it. To see China and Europe linked in these Bible prophecies about the end time, and then to see the Belt and Road Initiative linking them economically today, is astounding. In these current trends, we can see the groundwork now being laid for this powerful mart of nations prophesied of millennia ago to come together. And what's even more astounding is what the Bible shows that this mart of nations will do in the years ahead. Another quote from Mr. Fleury's booklet, Isaiah's End Time Vision, says, "The Bible contains many prophecies of that European power attacking America and many other prophecies of America being besieged," end quote. And then he explains that this besiegement will be accomplished by the Mart of Nations. And he writes, quote, "All of them are going to besiege America, Britain, and the Jewish nation. China and the giants of Asia will form a brief alliance with the European bloc. Should Europe, the resurrected Holy Roman Empire, find a way to take advantage, even for a moment, of key resources and strategic holdings of China, Russia, and Japan, it would have more than enough power to besiege the Anglo-Saxon nations." And then he writes, "This is why Isaiah's prophecy of an end-time mart of nations that includes both European and Asian powers is so intriguing, and why the trend of collusion between these two great economic blocks is worth watching," end quote. Mr. Fleury also draws special attention to Latin America by mentioning prophecies by the late educator Mr. Herbert W. Armstrong about Latin America's role in end-time events. Mr. Fleury writes, quote, "Herbert Armstrong long prophesied, and we expect, the alliance between Europe and South America to grow extremely strong," end quote. And in parts of Latin America, Europe already wields deep influence. And as soon as China enters into this brief alliance with Europe, then all of the influence that China's now building in Latin America and the Caribbean will translate into even greater European control over Latin America. Mr. Fleury points out that the situation will eventually result in a kind of European subjugation of Latin America. He says, quote, "The Latin American countries will become vassal states to Europe," end quote. So this is really the United States' backyard. So with this level of control, you know, and influence in Latin America, the European and Asian powers would be geographically positioned to lay siege to the U.S. One more important quote from Isaiah's End Time Vision says, "With a German-led Europe possessing great maritime power, North America will be surrounded on the east by Europe and the south by Latin America." There's another prophecy recorded in Deuteronomy 28:52 that provides more details about the besiegement of the United States and the United Kingdom by the Mart of Nations conglomerate. This passage says, quote, "And he shall besiege you in all your gates until your high and fenced walls come down, wherein you trust, throughout all the land. And he shall besiege you in all your gates throughout all your land, which the Lord your God has given you." There's a lot of meaning packed into this. Back when God was actively blessing the United States and the UK, he gave them control over numerous strategic locations that you could call sea gates. These are places like the Panama Canal, Sri Lanka, the Maldives, and Hong Kong. You can read about that in Genesis 22, verse 17, and also Genesis 24, verse 60. But now, each of these strategic locations is under China's control, or quickly headed that way. They're no longer under control of the U.S. and the U.K., but instead under Beijing. And it's leading to that future besiegement of the U.S. and the U.K. So the importance of China's growing dominance of world trade and China's strengthening links to Europe really is revealed in these Bible prophecies. And as Mr. Fleury said there, we're already at the outer edges of the times of the Gentiles. China is now the world's second most powerful economy, and the BRI is poised to further expand China's might considerably. Also, thanks partly to the BRI, control of more and more of the world's sea gates is being handed over to the Chinese. And all of this is setting the scene for that prophesied siege against America. In the near term, these developments point to a dark and just a really dismal future for America and some of its allies. But the trends that we're seeing right now playing out with the Belt and Road and with related initiatives, they're really confirming the prophecies of the Bible. And what else does the Bible prophesy about what will happen just beyond this economic siege and just beyond the fall of the United States and Britain? It prophesies of the most hope-filled era in human history. Mr. Fleury writes about this also in Isaiah's End Time Vision, saying, quote, "That trading partnership between the Asians and Europeans won't last long. Soon they will clash just before Jesus Christ returns and destroys both of them." End quote. So it's clear that Christ is going to return to earth, put an end to mankind's self-destruction, and usher in an age of peace and prosperity for the peoples of China and all the world. One very powerful sentence from Mr. Fleury's booklet says, quote, "Thank God there is great news beyond the bad news." I'm Jeremiah Jacques. We're coming to the end of Trumpet Hour. Thank you for listening today, and please go to thetrumpet.com and click on the Literature tab to order a free copy of Isaiah's End Time Vision. This booklet does a masterful job of explaining these prophecies that are now already in the early stages of fulfillment. And it does an amazing job of explaining what Mr. Fleury calls the great news that is tied to them. There's no shipping charge, no follow-up of any kind, so please order a copy of this potentially life-changing booklet. And if you go to the show notes for today's episode of Trumpet Hour, there on thetrumpet.com, you can also read Mr. Fleury's article called What Are the Times of the Gentiles? And you can read my article in the newest edition of the Philadelphia Trumpet about the Belt and Road Initiative. It's called Brave New World Made in China. Feel free to send us your thoughts and questions about the program by emailing letters@thetrumpet.com. Thanks to our technical staff, Dwight Falk and Josh Sloan, and we'll leave you today with this thought from Chinese Marxist revolutionary Mao Zedong, which he said many decades ago, and which clearly is resonating more loudly than ever in the Chinese mindset in 2019. He said, "All that the West has, China will have." Thank you for joining us. Until next time, keep watching your world.
Listening to Trumpet Hour on Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm. Understand your world.